This morning, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the sixth canto, chapter 18. And we're going to read 20 through 22. Because 20 and 21 have no purport. So we put 22 on the board, and we'll chant that one. So I'll just read 20 and 21, and then when we come to 22, we'll chant the verse. So text 20 goes like this. I'll read the Sanskrit also. Sri Rajovacha katam ta asurim bhavam apo yam patikam guru indrena prapita. This is 21. Indrena prapita satyam kim tat sadhu pitam hita. King Parikshit inquired, he's the Rajavacha. My dear Lord, of course he's asking Shukadeva Goswami, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demonic mentality. Why did Indra, the King of Heaven, convert him into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? So the chapter is about Diti. Diti is the one of the wives of Kashyapa Muni. There's two wives, Aditi and Diti. So Aditi is the mother of the Devas, and Aditi is the mother of the Devas. And Diti is the mother of the demons. Therefore, the demons are called Daichas, meaning coming from Diti. And the demigods are called Adityas, coming from Aditi. Aditi. So these are Aditi and Diti. So now he's asking about these he's mentioned, Sutta Goswami is telling him about the different dynasty or generations of the demons. So he mentions these 49 Maruts who were born from Diti. So Maharaj Pritchard now is interested. He said, and they became later demigods. Indra made them. Although they're demons, they become devas. They're asuras, but they become suras. They switch sides. So he says, why? They're born with asuram bhavam. The mentality, the bhava means the mentality or disposition, outlook of the asuras. But now Indra made them sa'avya, his own from his own people, that is into the demigods. So how did that happen? Did they perform sadhu kutam? Did they perform some pious acts or rituals for this to happen? That's what he wants to know. Then he continues. Pritchett, he says, yame sradadatte brahman rishayo hi maya saha parichnanaya bhagavan stano vyakyatu arasi. My dear Brahman, I and all these sages present, rishis, remember Maharaj sitting there, and then all these sages again, all of us, he says, sadate, we are eager to know about this. Therefore, please kindly tell us the reason. Okay. So now we come to text 22. And you'll notice text 22 begins Sri Sutta Uvacha. Now this reminds us that Sutta Goswami is telling this story to the sages at Namasharanya Forest, and what he's telling him is the discussion between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pritchett. So now we're back into the outer narrative, the outer discussion. So it's like, you know, these Russian dolls, you know, you open up and there's a little doll and a bigger, big doll, little doll. So the Bhagavatam's like there's a talk and two people are talking, and but they're talking about what other two people said, and they're talking what other two people said. So sometimes you're hopping around from these different levels. Okay, so now we'll chant text 22. Sri Sutta Uvacha Tad Vishnuratasya Sa Bharatayanir Vacho Nishamyadritam Olpam Artavat Sabhajayan San Nibritena Chitasa Jagada Satrayana Sarva Darshanah Sri Sutta Uvacha Tadvishnuratasya Sabhararayanir Vacho Nisamyadittam Alpa Artavat Sabhajayan San Nibritena Chitasa Jagara Satrayana Sarva Darshanaha Sri Sutu Vacha Vishnuratasya Sabhararayanir Vacho Nishamyadittam Alpa Artavat Sabhajayan San Nibritena Chetasa Jagara Satrayana Sarva Darshanah Sri Sutta Uvacha Vishnuratasya Sabhararayanir Vacho Nisamya Dittam Alpa Artavat Sabhajayan San Nibritena Chetasa Jagara Satrayana Sarva Darshanah Sutu Vacha Tadvishnuratasya Sabhararayanir Vacho Nishamyadittam Alpa Artavat Sabhajayan San Nibritena Chetasa
Sabhajayan San Nibritena Chetasa Jagara Satrayana Sarva Darshanah
aina. Shri Sutaha Uvacha. Shri Sutta Goswami said, Tat, those Vishnu Ratasya of Maharaj Parikshit. No, his name is Vishnu Rata. That's his name. Saha, he. Bararayani,
Bararayani,
Shukadev
Goswami,
Vachaha,
words,
Visamya,
hearing,
Adritam,
respectful,
Opam,
brief,
Artavat,
meaningful.
Savajayan,
son,
praising.
Nibritena
chetasa, with great pleasure.
Jagada,
replied.
Satrayana,
O Shaunaka.
Sarva,
Darshanaha,
who is aware of everything.
Translation, Sri Sutta Goswami said, O great sage, Shaunaka, after hearing Maharaj Parikshit, speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear. Shukadev Goswami, who was well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied, Srila Prabhupada, of course. Maharaj Parikshit's question was very much appreciated by Shukadeva Goswami, because although it was composed of a small number of words, it contained meaningful inquiries about how the sons of Diti, although born as demons, became demigods. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur stresses that even though Diti was very envious, her heart was purified because of a devotional attitude. Another significant topic is that although Kashyapa Muni was a learned scholar and was advanced in spiritual consciousness, he nonetheless fell a victim to the inducement of his beautiful wife. All these questions were posed in a small number of words, and therefore Shukadeva Goswami very much appreciated Maharaj Parikshit's inquiry. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesha Sunyavadi Pachachade Sitarane Om Gyanam Timurandasya Kanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Ndhritam Jain Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tudyascha Kripa Sindhu Bheva Chaputitanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha. So here we see, we heard the questions by Maharaj Parikshit. It was just a very few words, and so they're described here by uh, by Sukha Goswami.
Sutta Goswami as Alpa. And we have the expression Alpa Medism. So Alpa means just a little thing. A few words, but Artavat, full of meaning. So he appreciated that. He didn't speak very much, but what he said was very... Because because the story is interesting and significant, how it happens that this change took place. So he wants to talk about it. And the whole story has several topics. Here, Prabhupada mentions Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He of course, has also a purport on this verse. So he says there's two principal topics. One, Diti was envious. She was very angry at Indra. Because of Indra, her two sons had been killed by Vishnu. Her two firstborn sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. They both were killed by Vishnu because the Lord was trying to help Indra. These demons are sometimes called Indrari, the enemies of Indra. She was angry at Indra. And so now, she wants her husband, Kashyapa Muni, to give her another son who can kill Indra. So that's the mentality what she wants. She wants revenge. She wants revenge for what happened to her. So she needs a great son. So now she has to convince her husband to have sex with her and give her this son. Now Kashyapa, we get the story, you know. Now Kashyapa, he knows her very well. and so he knows what she wants. He's a vidva, you know. He's a sage. And I look at his position. I mean, he's the father of all the demigods. So he's a muni. He's a sage. And so, but nevertheless, she wraps him around her finger, as we say. She's really beautiful and she's very charming and she knows how to act. So that's one of the morals of the story. So he became attracted and felt served him so nicely and all these, you see about this. And so he says, well, okay, what do you want? So she says, okay, you promised me something, so I want a son that can kill Indra. And he said, oh, what have I done? But he said he promised her this. So then he tells her that, okay, to get a good son, I want you to do these rituals. First, you take this vrata, you do this. So she does. But they were actually Vaishnava rituals, that she performed. And so, because of that, she was engaging in devotional service, even though she was not the nicest person. and so, And so Indra is watching her, everything that she does, and he sees that she makes a mistake. You know, that's his opportunity. So he goes into her womb where there's this son of embryo in the making, and he chops him up into 49 pieces. So then there's 49 Maruts appeared. They were born. She had 49. like that. The Maruts are demigods of the air, the different kinds of air. And so, but then because that she had performed these Vaishnava ceremonies, they all became the air gods, you know, the gods of the air, therefore, or demigods. So that's what happened. So the things we learn from this story are two things. One is about the power of devotional service, how that could make such a big difference, and how demons can become devotees, which is important for us to know. Because many people were trying to become, make devotees of demons. So it's nice to know. The stories like this, also the story of Ajamya, how like really sinful, fallen people can become elevated by the power of devotional service. So that's really nice to know. So Diti is envious, so angry, so her heart becomes purified because of devotional, and therefore even though her whole mentality was not so nice, nevertheless, she had sons that went over to the other side. It's interesting to note that the Bhagavatam gives us a history of the universe, and in this history, we see that almost from the very beginning, there's this kind of cosmic war going on between the Adityas and the Daityas, the Suras and the Asuras. And it's really a family fight. They're half-brothers. They both have the same father, Kashyapa. But the different mothers, Diti and Aditi. And so the Devas, they are they're also not pure devotees as a rule, but Prabhupada calls them Sakama devotees. Devotees who have some material desires, but they're servants of the Lord, and they're in such a high position that even though they're not so pure, sometimes they get to see Vishnu and stuff like that because they're situated in the mode of goodness. So they are the people who run the universe. In English, we have this word derived from Greek, bureaucrat, meaning somebody who runs in the government office. They have the various offices called a bureau. You know, same in German, office, but bureaucrat means a person who functions in one of these offices. But in the Bible, which was written in Greek, Saint Paul refers to really the demigods. He doesn't really know who they are, but he calls them cosmocrats. They run the universe. Cosmocrates, these cosmocrates. So even in those days, they understood there were some bigger personal powers up there. Right? So the demigods are cosmocrats. Because Prabhupada describes just like a city, you know, you turn the tap and the water comes out, and you put the thing in and there's electricity and so many services are coming, and for each of these, there's an office that does it, but ultimately they're people running it. So similarly, the universe has people running it. So all the old religions of the world describe these people. The devas. They all do. Everywhere. And also they describe, we have the gods and then we have the anti-gods. The other side. But they run these things. It seems to be that because the Supreme Lord is a person, that everywhere there are people. It's not impersonal. And the history is that to some extent, over the course of time, the human mentality has come to make things impersonal. Even when Christianity came, the classical world, the world of the Greeks and the Romans, there were gods everywhere. Every stream, there was some lady, a naiad, who was the goddess of that stream. Every woods and trees, they had its little deity, and mountains had its deities, and they were all over the place, running around everywhere. And you read that people saw them and they talked to them. And then we read about the gods, the pagan gods, the Greek and Roman gods, and they're sort of like us, but they're very powerful, they run things. And they have some social relationships with human beings. Zeus, the Greeks called him Zeus, comes from the Sanskrit Dyaus. He's called Zeus. And then the Roman god, you take the Greek word Zeus Pater, God the Father, and it comes Jupiter. This is the same. So it's really is Indra from our point of view. So this Zeus, he's coming down and having sex with attractive girls on Earth and having these children who are like Achilles, Helen of Troy, all these things. And people would see these gods and there was some relationship. And everybody talks about this time, and now we don't see them anymore. We don't see them anymore. They seem to be gone. First of all, Christianity, they to some extent, they decided that because of Christianity, they thought that there was too many, they didn't like all these many gods, so there just should be one god. In a sense, they're against demigod worship. We can understand this. This they get from the Jews. The Christian attitude was actually, they thought that they were real, but that they were demons. The early Christians. They would have this experience that somebody would be possessed of a demon, and saint or a powerful person, they call it the cast out the demon, make the demon go away. They exorcise the demon. And so many times, this person, and the demon is coming out, and then this person speaks in the voice of the demon. And he says, you see that temple over there? See, on the hill, is there a temple? Apollo, they're worshiping, the non-Christians are worshiping. He says, that's my temple. So they tell these stories so that what they thought is the people that were worshiping Apollo or Artemis or all the, you know, they were worshiping real people, but they were demons in disguise to trick people into worshiping them. That was their theory of other religions. So we still have this today. I mean, when I used to go on the streets all the time when we were doing book distribution and Harinam, these Christians would come and give us these little booklets and everything. And there was the same theory that Krishna is some demon that you're worshipping who's tricking you, you know? This kind of thing. So. Yeah, that would be nice. I understood what they were, that this is a very, very old, this is not a very good theory of other religions. it's entirely wrong. So anyway, the course of history, so Christianity, you know, to some extent there's God, but it's really up there, high, you know, they got from, although they, you know, gradually the various saints, they became to be like demigods anyway, but.
The Catholic Church.
Huh?
Only the Catholic
Church. Oh, yeah, the Catholic, remember, then, you know. But they'll come back in again, somehow, rather. You'll see. So then, you know, the Catholic Church was pretty much the only church in Europe for quite some time. Then they decide that was pagans had crept back in. You know, there was Luther's charge that they've let this stuff come back in. We have to again get it out. So again, things become more impersonal. So gradually, you see, the universe becomes impersonal, depersonalized, you know, get rid of the people. And then gradually also, and that makes the way for science, you see, because if there are people running everything, then you want something to happen, you have to go and, you know, ask them for things. But if it's there are no people there and it's just a machine, then maybe you can take control. So then there's the obstacle that maybe there's one God in charge of everything. So we want to be scientific, then this God is in the way. So then there is associated in the 18th century this philosophy that's called deism. After Newton, everybody decided that the universe is like a machine, like a clock. Just like today, we think everything is like a computer. So in those days, the latest cutting edge technology were clocks in the 18th century. So then the universe was like a clock. And God, well, he made just like a good clockmaker. He makes it, and he makes it so well, you wind it up and you walk away and it works all by itself. So this is deism. God made it, he wound it up, and then he doesn't interfere. It's all a machine that's running automatically. So then, of course, they go a little further and let's get rid of the clockmaker. Let's just say it somehow came into being all by itself. And this is so everything, so gradually God disappears, you know, it just vanishes. He goes away, he retires, and then finally, well, we don't need him anymore. Anyway, he doesn't interfere with anything. So this is the history of depersonalization. So you notice that Prabhupada is bringing back this. So we read this thing, oh, here the gods are back. Huh? The gods are returning. And so we discover that they're running the world. We see all about Indra, Chandra, Surya, all these people are there. Prabhupada doesn't say they're mythological, you know, And also the anti-gods. There's this cosmic warfare, this interplanetary warfare going on between, because the gods, the devatas, they want to run everything on behalf of the Supreme Lord. The demons want to take it over and run it themselves. They think they can do a better job. They don't like the system of Vishnu, that you have to worship the Lord in order to be happy. They think they can do it themselves. This is the demonic attitude. The Prabhupada points out they want to be immortal in this life. So they think there's problems with the universe. Therefore, you see in the Bhagavatam, they're big on technology. This Maya Danava, he's making spaceships and rockets and all kinds of. He's a big engineer, a big technological person, and so they want to take it over. So they're fighting with Indra to take Indra's place, and then make it run themselves without any reference to Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu was the most ambitious, because usually the demons are trying to get Indra's post. But Hiranyakashipu wanted the position of Brahma. He knew there was something, because he was worshipping Brahma. Remember, he was worshipping Brahma. And why was he worshipping Brahma? Well, the same thing, he wanted his post. So that a very interesting mentality is there, that here's somebody very powerful. And so what do? You worship them so that they will be pleased and give you power. What will you do with your powers? You'll kill them and take their place. Huh? This happens all the times in politics and business also. Somebody, he joins some firm, and he works very hard, and he pleases the owner, and the owner likes him and teaches him everything he knows and gives him more and more power. And then the guy is ready, and then he has a board meeting and says, you know, this old man, we love him dearly, but he's old-fashioned, he doesn't know the latest techniques. Because of him, our company is losing money. And so now, all glories to him, and he goes into retirement. So it's similar things. Also, the Mayavadis. It's a funny thing, but the Mayavadis worship Krishna. They worship Krishna. And they think, you know, by worshipping Krishna, they come closer and closer to Krishna. But then when they get really close, you know, they whip up, they take off the devotee mask, and they say, neti, neti, neti. They kill him, you know, and now I'm God. This is it. So this battle has been going on. Hiranyakashipu wanted the position of Brahma because he wanted to do something that you couldn't do from Indra's position. And he wanted to change the result of pious and impious activities. If you do something impious, you suffer. The karma is bad karma. And you do something pious, you get good karma. So he wanted to make that when you do something pious, you get bad karma. And when you do something demonic, you get good karma. He thought he could do that. That was what he wanted. So anyway, this interplanetary warfare has been going on for a very long time. The significance of it is that the demons are materially very competent. They know how to do things. They're materialists, so they really get into the material energy. And they do things very well. It is said in the Bhagavatam Hiranyakashipu was running the universe. He had gotten Indra's position, and all the devatas had gone into exile. You know, just like right now, there's all these Iranians all over the world because of, you know, whenever their country gets taken away, everybody, they go into different countries and hide out and everything. And then when there's a revolution and the dictator is gone, then they all come back. So Indra and all the devas, they were in hiding, they were in exile. And so Hiranyakashipu was running the universe, and it says that he ran it better than Indra. His management was better than Indra. Which that reminds me of the story when Benito Mussolini came into power in Italy in the 30s, a fascist dictator. All of Europe glorified him at first. Everybody was so enthusiastic because for the first time in history, the trains in Italy ran on time. So sometimes they can get things done, you know, if nothing else, because of great fear. So the demons, you know, they're very powerful, they're very good, they have advanced medical technology. You know, we read about Sukracharya telling them what to do and bringing people back to life from the dead. I mean, they're... And so sometimes the demigods are about to lose. And that's when Krishna comes. Vishnu interferes in this battle. That's the whole history. They get in big conflicts, and when the devatas really need help, he appears. It's described that just like when you rub together two pieces of wood, fire comes out. So from the friction, it's called friction, you know, the heat that's generated by rubbing two things together. So between the friction of the conflict between the demigods and the demons, Vishnu comes out. So that's why this is one reason it's of particular interest to us. So what can we say that Prabhupada is telling us about all these things? When I became a devotee, I was willing to believe that God is a person. But then I found out that I had to believe in gods too. Demigods. 30 crore of demigods, or something like that. So many of them. So, but now I can see, if you look into the history of humanity, and you'll find out that in the oldest stories, that everyone says that there was a time when everybody was coming into contact with these people we don't see anymore. You know, every people, they have their stories of these demigods or little local gods and little demonic kind of guys or something, kobolds and this and that, you know, all these people. In Ireland, they have these stories that the Irish fairies are originally, they're like Gandharvas, you know? I mean, they're like supernatural people. And everybody was mixing it up together, the human race. And now we don't see them anymore. And the reason is that Kali Yuga begins, and the devas don't come. They stop coming. These people, we just lose our ability to see and interact with these things. Before, the devas used to come, everybody used to see them, they used to have relationships with us, we'd see all these other people, now we don't. And maybe it's us. It's just like sometimes a country is very nice and tourists come all the time. Like Beirut in Lebanon is a beautiful city at one time. I remember visiting it before. It was like the on the Mediterranean. It was so nice, you know, the Paris of the Mediterranean, you know, in Lebanon, Beirut. And then, you know, wars start there, and it turns into everybody's bombing, and they're falling apart, it's just being destroyed. And where are the tourists? They don't come. You don't go there anymore. And so maybe some little child says, I remember these beings that used to come here to this place, and they had cameras, and they had so much money, and they were spending money to everybody, and we had wealth from these tourists, you know, these Germans and these Americans, and they were like wonderful people. And now they, who are they? You know, we don't see them anymore. So for the same reason that the Devatas don't come, they don't come anymore. No. So this has been noticed, and Schiller, the German Dichter poet, he said once, in the days when the gods were more human, humans were more divine. You see, so that we were more like them, and so you could interact with. So we are less divine. So I can believe. And Prabhupada told us that by Sankirtan they'll appear again. By sacrifice. It's said that when Prithvi Maharaj performed Yajna, even the common people could see the gods. They would come and everybody could see them. Even everybody. They were all visible to some. But even the common people could see the gods. So when they're sacrificed, they will come. So Prabhupada said by Sankirtan, and if things become pure enough, again they'll come back. Just like, I guess, tourists are starting to go back to Sarajevo and some places like that. You know, and it becomes a nice place to visit. They'll come back again. So we shall see. So anyway, we're hearing these stories. They're all in connection with Krishna, somehow or other. And from these stories, we learn these interesting things. So Maharaj Parikshit was eager to hear about this. And he's also the people with him, they all wanted to hear. And that's how we learn, by this the eagerness, and eagerness to hear about Krishna. That's an important part of, we have this verse, you know, what is it? Yeah, let me find it. It's early on. Prabhupada says some things about this. Yeah, about these stories about Krishna, Shinvata Sokatam Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha Vidyantasto Yabadvani Vidunoti Suritsitam. This is talking about those who are Shrinvatam, those who are eager to hear, who want to hear. Everywhere you see Maharaj Parikshit is always asking questions. Anytime, he's basically saying to Shukadeva Goswami, tell me more. Well, you mentioned this, I want to know about this, I want to know about that. So he's inquisitive. He always wants to know more. So that's how one has to approach Bhagavatam, with that same eagerness to hear, so that one can hear with a great deal of attention. So that's why he says here, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart. So Krishna is already here in our hearts. And he is called the Hritsatham. He is the benefactor of the devotees. Suhrit, the well-wisher of all the devotees. And he's in the heart. Hriyantashtaha. And so when he sees that the devotee has developed the Srinvata Swakatam Krishna, he has developed the urge to hear Krishna's, the words about Krishna, his own words, which are Punya Shravana Kirtanaha. They are, when they have spiritual power, Punya, purifying power when you hear and chant them. So he himself, who's in the heart, he cleanses Hridyantashto Hriyabhadrani. The inauspicious things in the heart, and the word Bhadra means auspicious, so these are Abhadrani, those things that are inauspicious in the heart. Which Prabhupada here translates as desires for material enjoyment. So they go away. This is purifying for everybody. And then the very next verse is the famous one, Nasta Parayeshu Abhadresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavad Gita. So it says, see, Nasta Parayeshu Abhadresu, still Abhadra. Those inauspicious things in the heart are nasta parayushu, almost totally destroyed. How? Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. As Prabhupada translates as regular attendance in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Because nitya here means something you do every day. One meaning of nitya is regular. It means eternal, but also just you do it over every day. Like there's naimittika dharma and nitya dharma. Nitya dharma, those things you do every day, and naimittika dharma, those things you do on certain occasions. Right? So Bhagavatam is nityam, Bhagavata Sevaya. So he says, by regular attendance in classes in Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, this Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavata can be either the book in relationship to Krishna. Bhagavan Krishna, so Bhagavata is that with a long A. Bhagavata means that which is coming from or related to Krishna. So there's the book, Bhagavata, in the neuter, and Bhagavata, the person, Bhagavata. So both of these, Sevaya. We render service to Bhagavatam by hearing Bhagavatam. That's our service. And Bhagavatam is, then the Lord, what comes into being is Bhagavati Uttama Shloka Bhakti, a devotional service to the Lord, who is Uttama Shloka. This is a reference to Bhagavatam, Uttama Shloka. Shloka means verse, a poetry, and Uttama, the topmost poetry, the highest poetry. He was glorified. So Uttama Shloka is the name of Krishna, the one who is glorified by the greatest poetry, Uttama Shloka. And so devotion to that person, Bhavati, comes into being Naishtiki, irrevocable. In other words, it does, once this happens, it doesn't go away again. It doesn't go away. So this means, this is that there's a good reason to pay attention. We are supposed to hear Bhagavatam, it says later on, with rapt attention. Just if you If some person comes and he's made millions and millions of dollars on the stock market, and he says, now I'm going to give a lecture to a select few people in which I'll tell you how I did it. It's certified. He's made all this money. Now I'm going to give a lecture, and some people can come, and I'll tell you everything I know. Those people who come, they will hang on to every word. It's their chance, because if they learn what he has to say and understand it, then they also can make millions and millions of dollars. So Bhagavatam says if we really pay attention to this book, we will become totally in love with Krishna. The dirty things in our heart will go away. We'll become free from birth and death, the material world, and we'll attain pure devotion to Krishna. So it is good to be eager to hear this book. We should keep this in mind. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes?
Krishna's last point, like hearing, to give us breath attention. Mm-hmm. But so we can learn from the Bible, Jesus said that people who want to hear, they shall hear, the people who want to see, they shall see. So, what is an obstacle to be that really attentive hearing, because it's not always this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good question. Here's, Prabhupada talks about this. He really talks about it very, very clearly. In fact, I can probably find the place. Here it is. At the end of the third chapter, first canto, this is the place where Suta Goswami says that he heard the Bhagavatam. He's talking to the sages at Nameshwara. I heard this Bhagavatam. When Shukadeva Goswami was telling Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit, I heard him. And he says, I heard him with rapt attention. Nivishta, he probably says he drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears, like you're really, really thirsty. And you've been running and it's hot. And and somebody gives you some juice, so you drink it like this. So I heard him with rapt attention, and by his mercy, I learned Bhagavatam from my great powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him, and as I have realized it. This is what he says. So Prabhupada says, first of all, he says in the purport, one can certainly see directly, the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam, if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Shukadeva Goswami. So you have to have the right person, he says, if you want to hear, if you want to see Krishna in the pages. But then he says, simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. So, actually, one who hears Bhagavatam from the right person in the right way, then is also able, is the person who can be the teacher of Bhagavatam. The word Nivishta meant that Suta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention and the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. Now, the Prabhupada answers your question. Okay? No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. So we have to fix our attention on Krishna. If there are impurities in our mind, if there's all kinds of desires for sense gratification, then our attention will be diverted or not strong. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. So that's the next thing. People want to be pure in mind, then Their behavior has to be pure. What behavior? No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So this eating, sleeping, fearing, or defending and mating, Prabhupada lists, this is what the animals do, and also what humans have in common with the animals. Eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So these are the basic animal activities of life. Even those have to be done in a pure way, in relationship for Krishna and for Krishna's service. And so, if then our actions are pure, then the mind can become pure. So now we understand why when Prabhupada brought Bhagavatam to the West, he also created ISKCON. Because if you just have the book and you don't have the people who know how to hear, what good is it? Bhagavatam may be a book, you can get it on a bookshelf, or you can go to some universities where the professor will sit in front of the class and teach Bhagavatam to the students, but it doesn't happen. Krishna doesn't appear on the page, there's no realized knowledge, it's just dead. But so Bhagavatam requires certain conditions. So Prabhupada made ISKCON so that people would become qualified. Prabhupada is a qualified speaker, we become qualified hearers, and then we can also become qualified speakers in turn, and so on. That's how Bhagavatam will happen. So how to give attention? So that's why we have our regulative principles of Krishna consciousness. We are in the same way. It's the same principle when we want to chant the holy name. We have to fix our mind on Krishna. Our mind wants to go away, we bring it back. That's simple. It's also practice for hearing Bhagavatam. It's the same process. Hearing Bhagavatam is just the same as chanting japa. I think of Srimad Bhagavatam as one big name of Krishna. We have, you know, we have little names and we have big names. Yamuna Tira Vanachari, it means, you know, that's a name for Krishna. He who is accustomed to wandering in the forests on the bank of the Yamuna River. It's just this activity, his pastime. So you just keep adding, and you know, and finally you get Bhagavatam. It's the same principle. So we do all these things so we can become qualified hearers and then in turn the qualified speakers of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's the same, Prabhupada says, seeing Krishna directly in the pages. Just like when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, when the chanting becomes pure, Krishna appears. He's not different from his name, and he's not different from his book, by the same principle. So it's worthwhile. So unfortunately, we live in the age of distraction. The mind, so many things. People suffer from attention, they have this name, attention deficit disorder. ADD in America, or HAD, hyperactive attention deficit disorder. No one can sit still for a minute. It become the disease of children of our age. It might have something to do with watching television and playing video games. We all, everybody in the material, we have an attention deficit disorder. Especially when it comes to Krishna. So we have to get our minds that are like not properly formed from the beginning. Our minds are misformed. And so we have to take some effort to bring them back to a sound, healthy condition. That's a fact. Okay. Yeah?
I've got one question. You said that the Mani people are very intelligent, but it seems to me that they also have some different type of philosophies.
Yeah.
And they think also about some transcendent things.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that there are three different types of philosophies, which is called Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, and also this impersonal Buddhism, which is light. So say that's all nothing, it's all light. And what was it said? An impersonalism. There's something, but we cannot see. Can you explain this philosophy? What is behind? Because they're also very intelligent. Sometimes we meet with people who are very...
Well, Prabhupada said there's two kinds of intelligent men. One is intelligent for sense gratification, the other is intelligent for self-realization. How these philosophies come about, Krishna says, when you want to forget me, I give you all the power to forget. Matasmitajnanam apohanam cha. So there are all these arguments that there is no God, that God is impersonal, that God is void. When they want that, Krishna gives them the intelligence to come up that way. So that's where it comes from. Actually, Krishna is giving them this facility. So I also, this described also, when Krishna describes the demons in the Mahabharata, they say, Anishwara, I forgot how the verse starts, the word is, there's Anishwara, the demons believe that there's no God in control. Let's see. Apratishtam, there's no foundation, there's no support.
But impersonal Brahma is also sometimes said to be the support, the impersonal Brahma.
It's not the support.
No.
No, that's not, you know, if you, strictly speaking, impersonalism, the Shankaracharya, Mayavada philosophy says, the absolute truth has no energies. That means what you see here doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, it has no support. It's not real. Let me find this verse. So this, the list is there. Yeah, the demonic, they believe these things. Somehow or other, I can't remember the verse right now. It's left my head. But it describes them. They think it's only due to lust. That is to say, you can say it's entirely natural causes. It has no anishwara, apratishta, no foundation or support, no absolute truth. It doesn't come from anything. Like that. So the Shankaracharya philosophy really separates. If you ask in Mayavada, what is the relationship between God and this world that we see around us, there isn't any. There is no relationship. That's there. That's their conclusion. So all these philosophies are there. From the demons, all different kinds. They're basically is like it. People like modern thinkers. They're nihilistic. Everything comes from nothing. That's basically. That's basically what it says. Yeah, here it is. Asatyam, that's the first word. Asatyam, they say the world is asatyam, it is not real. Apratishtam, it has no foundation. Te jagara, they say about the world. Anishwaram, no controller. Aparaspara, without any cause. It has arisen without any cause. And this is like modern, you know, how to get everything from nothing. So they're what you call nihilists. So they believe in nothing. But sometimes it happens when they get a little disgusted with the world, then the first thing they become attracted to is Buddhism. That's why everybody likes Buddhism so much. So they believe in nothing. And then here's Buddha say, yeah, there's nothing. But somehow it's a spiritual nothing. It's nirvana. And so they have to make the smallest possible change to their mentality. And it's really Shankaracharya who takes his Buddhism and makes it into Vedic terms, you know. Here these people are Buddhists, and he says, no, it's not nirvana, it's not shunya, it's Brahman. It's Brahman, but Brahman has no name, no form, no qualities, no activities. How does that differ from nothing at all? It's the same thing, but you're calling it Brahman. So it's easy to go from. So it attracts the atheists, and maybe gradually they can become. Anyway, this is Krishna knows them. Asatyam apatistam jagadahur anishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kamahaitkam. That's these guys. Unreal, no foundation, no God in control, comes from nothing, and no other cause than lust, and so on. A long time ago this was noted. It's not modern philosophy, it's been around a very long time. Anything else? Yeah?
Just a small question. Because yesterday you mentioned that if one goes into sense verification, the result is that one will be attracted much more from this sense verification.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does it also work the other way around, that when we try to accept more and more
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. If we perform austerity, the regular principles, then Krishna consciousness increases. So we should become addicted to Krishna consciousness. And when you get more Krishna consciousness, you want more. Right. But this is what satisfies. This is the good addiction. Asakti means, the stage in devotional service is called asakti, which means addicted to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.